Chapter 19. Then was good for Madame Lenoir's gaming table, and the only thing which the young fellow never lost was his good humor. If fortune shook her swift wings and fled away from him, he laughed at the retreating pinions, and you saw him dancing and laughing as gaily, after losing a rouleau, as if he was made of money, and really at the 5,000 a year which his mother said was the amount of the Kickleberry property. But when her ladyship's jointure, and the young lady's allowances, and the interest of mortgages were paid out of the 5,000 a year, I grieve to say that the gallant Kickleberry's income was to be counted by hundreds, and not by thousands. So that, for any young lady who wants a carriage and who can live without one, our friend the Baronet is not a desirable specimen of bachelors. Now, whether it was that the presence of his mamma interrupted his pleasures, or certain of her ways did not please him, or that he had lost all his money at roulette, and could afford no more, certain it is that after about a fortnight's stay at Noirbourg, he went off to shoot with Count Einhorn in Westphalia, he and Hicks parting the dearest of friends, and the Baronet going off on a pony which the captain lent to him. Between him and Milliken, his brother-in-law, there was not much sympathy. For he pronounced Mr. Milliken to be what is called a muff, and had never been familiar with his elder sister Lavinia, of whose poems he had a mean opinion, and who used to tease and worry him by teaching him French, and telling tales of him to his mamma when he was a schoolboy home for the holidays. Whereas, between the Baronet and Miss Fanny there seemed to be the closest affection. They walked together every morning to the waters. They joked and laughed with each other as happily as possible. Fanny was almost ready to tell fibs to screen her brother's malpractices from her mamma. She cried when she heard of his mishaps, and that he had lost too much money at the green table, and when Sir Thomas went away, the good little soul brought him 5 louis, which was all the money as he had. For you see she paid her mother handsomely for her board. And when her little gloves and milliner's bills were settled, how much was there left out of 200 a year? And she cried when she heard that Hicks had lent Sir Thomas money, and went up and said, "Thank you, Captain Hicks," and shook hands with the captain so eagerly that I thought he was a lucky fellow who had a father a wealthy attorney in Bedford Row. Hago, I saw how matters were going. The birds must sing in the springtime, and the flowers bud. Mrs. Milliken, in her character of invalid, took the advantage of her situation to have her husband constantly about her, reading to her, or fetching the doctor to her, or watching her whilst she was dozing, and so forth. And Lady Kickleberry found the life which this pair led rather more monotonous than that sort of existence which she liked, and would leave them alone with Fanny, Captain Hicks not uncommonly coming in to take tea with the three, whilst her ladyship went to the redoubt to hear the music, or read the papers, or play a game of whist there. The newspaper room at Noirbourg is next to the roulette room, into which the doors are always open. And Lady K would come, with newspaper in hand, into this playroom, sometimes, and look on at the gamesters. I have mentioned a little Russian boy, a little imp with the most mischievous intelligence, and good humor in his face, who was suffered by his parents to play as much as he chose, and who pulled bonbons out of one pocket and Napoleons out of the other, and seemed to have quite a diabolical luck at the table. Lady Kickleberry's terror and interest at seeing this boy were extreme. She watched him, and he seemed always to win, and at last her ladyship put down just a florin, only just 1 florin, on one of the numbers at roulette which the little Russian imp was backing. Number 27 came up, and the croupiers flung over 3 gold pieces, and 5 florins to Lady Kickleberry, which she raked up with a trembling hand. She did not play any more that night, but sat in the playroom, pretending to read the Times newspaper. But you could see her eye peering over the sheet, and always fixed on the little imp of a Russian. He had very good luck that night, and his winning made her very savage. As he retired, rolling his gold pieces into his pocket and sucking his barley sugar, she glared after him with angry eyes, and went home, and scolded everybody, and had no sleep. I could hear her scolding. Our apartments in the Tissish house overlooked Lady Kickleberry's suite of rooms. The great windows were open in the autumn. Yes, I could hear her scolding, and see some other people sitting whispering in the embrasure, or looking out on the harvest moon. The next evening, Lady Kickleberry shirked away from the concert, and I saw her in the playroom again, going round and round the table, and, lying in ambush behind the journal de debits, I marked how, after looking stealthily round, my lady whipped a piece of money under the croupier's elbow, and, there having been no coin there previously, I saw a florin on the zero. She lost that, and walked away. Then she came back and put down 2 florins on a number, and lost again, and became very red and angry. Then she retreated, and came back a third time, and a seat being vacated by a player, Lady Kickleberry sat down at the verdant board. Ah me! As he had a pretty good evening, and carried off a little money again that night. The next day was Sunday. She gave 2 florins at the collection at church, to Fanny's surprise at Mama's liberality. On this night of course there was no play. Her ladyship wrote letters, and read a sermon. But the next night she was back at the table, and won very plentifully, until the little Russian sprite made his appearance, when it seemed that her luck changed. She began to bet upon him, and the young Kalmyk lost too. Her ladyship's temper went along with her money. First she backed the Kalmyk, and then she played against him. When she played against him, his luck turned, and he began straightway to win. She put on more and more money as she lost. Her winnings went. Gold came out of secret pockets. As he had but a florin left at last, and tried it on a number, and failed. She got up to go away. I watched her, and I watched Mr. Justiciacus too, who put down a Napoleon, when he thought nobody was looking. The next day my Lady Kickleberry walked over to the money changers, where she changed a couple of circular notes. She was at the table that night again. And the next night, and the next night, and the next. By about the fifth day she was like a wild woman. She scolded so, that Hirsch, the courier, said he should retire from Monsieur's service, as he was not hired by Lady Kickleberry. That bowman gave warning, and told another footman in the building, that he wouldn't stand the old cat no longer, blow him if he would. That the maid, who was a Kickleberry girl, and Fanny cried. And that Mrs. Milliken's maid, Finch, complained to her mistress, who ordered her husband, to remonstrate with her mother. Milliken remonstrated with his usual mildness, and, of course, was routed by her ladyship. Mrs. Milliken said, "Give me the daggers," and came to her husband's rescue. A battle royal ensued. The scared Milliken hanging about his blessed Lavinia, and entreating and imploring her to be calm. Mrs. Milliken was calm. She asserted her dignity as mistress of her own family, as controller of her own household, as wife of her adored husband, and she told her mama that with her, or here she must not interfere, that she knew her duty as a child, but that she also knew it as a wife. As a the rest of the sentence was drowned, as Milliken, rushing to her, called her his soul's angel, his adored blessing. Lady Kickleberry remarked that Shakespeare was very right in stating how much sharper than a thankless tooth it is to have a serpent child. Mrs. Milliken said, the conversation could not be carried on in this manner. That it was best her mama should now know, once for all, that the way in which she assumed the command at Piggy Onkit was intolerable, that all the servants had given warning, and it was with the greatest difficulty they could be soothed. And that, as their living together only led to quarrels and painful recriminations, the calling her, after her forbearance, a serpent child, was an expression which she would hope to forgive and forget, they had better part. Lady Kickleberry wears a front, and, I make no doubt, a complete JC, or she certainly would have let down her back hair at this minute, so overpowering were her feelings, and so bitter her indignation at her daughter's black ingratitude. She intimated some of her sentiments, by ejaculatory conjurations of evil. She hoped her daughter might not feel what ingratitude was, that she might never have children to turn on her, and bring her to the grave with grief. Bring me to the grave with fiddlestick, Mrs. Milliken said with some asperity. Andy, as we are going to part, Mama, and as Horace has paid everything on the journey as yet, and we have only brought a very few circular notes with us, perhaps you will have the kindness to give him your share of the traveling expenses for you, for Fanny, and your two servants whom you would bring with you. And the man has only been a perfect hindrance and great useless log, and our courier has had to do everything. Your share is now £82. Lady Kicklebury at this gave three screams, so loud that even the resolute Lavinia stopped in her speech. Her ladyship looked wildly colon Lavinia. Horace. Fanny, my child, she said, come here, and listen to your mother's shame. What? Cried Horace, aghast. I am ruined. I am a beggar. Yes, a beggar. I have lost all at yonder dreadful table. How do you mean all? How much is all? Asked Horace. All the money I brought with me, Horace. I intended to have paid the whole expenses of the journey. Yours, this ungrateful child's everything. But, a week ago, having seen a lovely baby's lace dress at the lace shop, and one enough at WHWH to pay for it, all but two florins in an evil moment I went to the roulette table, and lost every shilling. And now, on my knees before you, I confess my shame. I am not a tragic painter, and certainly won't attempt to depict this harrowing scene. But what could she mean by saying she wished to pay everything? As he had but £20 notes. And how she was to have paid all the expenses of the tour with that small sum, I cannot conjecture. The confession, however, had the effect of mollifying poor Milliken and his wife. After the latter had learned that her mama had no money at all at her London banker's, and had overdrawn her account there, Lavinia consented that Horace should advance her £50 upon her ladyship's solemn promise of repayment. And now it was agreed that this highly respectable lady should return to England, quick as she might, somewhat sooner than all the rest of the public did, and leave Mr. and Mrs. Horace Milliken behind her, as the waters were still considered highly salutary to that most interesting invalid. And to England Lady Kicklebury went, taking advantage of Lord Talboy's return thither, to place herself under his lordship's protection, as if the enormous bowman was not protector sufficient for her ladyship. And as if Captain Hicks would have allowed any mortal man, any German student, any French tourist, any Prussian whiskerando, to do a harm to Miss Fanny. For though Hicks is not a brilliant or poetical genius, I am bound to say that the fellow has good sense, good manners, and a good heart, and with these qualities, a competent sum of money, and a pair of exceedingly handsome mustaches, perhaps the poor little Mrs. Launcelot Hicks may be happy. No accident befell Lady Kicklebury on her voyage homewards. But she got one more lesson at Aix-la-Chapelle, which may serve to make her ladyship more cautious for the future. For, seeing Madame la Princesse de Mogador enter into a carriage on the railway, into which Lord Talboys followed, nothing would content Lady Kicklebury but to rush into the carriage after this noble pair. And the vehicle turned out to be what is called on the German lines, and what I wish were established in England, the Rajcoupe. Having seated himself in this vehicle, and looked rather sulkily at my lady, Lord Talboys began to smoke, which, as the son of an English earl, heir to many thousands per annum, Lady Kicklebury permitted him to do. And she introduced herself to Madame la Princesse de Mogador, mentioning to Her Highness that as he had the pleasure of meeting Madame la Princesse at Regensburg, that she, Lady K., was the mother of the Chevalier de Kicklebury, who had the advantage of the acquaintance of Madame la Princesse, and that she hoped Madame la Princesse had enjoyed her stay at the waters. To these advances, the Princess of Magadha returned a gracious and affable salutation, exchanging glances of peculiar meaning with two highly respectable bearded gentlemen who traveled in her suite. And, when asked by Milady whereabouts Her Highness's residence was at Paris, said that her hotel was in the Rue Notre Dame de Lorette, where Lady Kicklebury hoped to have the honor of waiting upon Madame la Princesse de Magadha. But when one of the bearded gentlemen called the princess by the familiar name of Fifin, and the other said, "Vous tout fumer, Magadha," and the princess actually took a cigar and began to smoke, Lady Kicklebury was aghast and trembled, and presently Lord Talboys burst into a loud fit of laughter. "What is the cause of your lordship's amusement?" asked the dowager, looking very much frightened, and blushing like a maiden of 16. "Excuse me, Lady Kicklebury, but I can't help it," he said. "You've been talking to your opposite neighbor. She don't understand a word of English and calling her Princess and Highness, and she's no more a princess than you are one. She is a little milliner in the street she mentioned, and she dances at Mobile and Chateau Rouge." Hearing these two familiar names, the princess looked hard at Lord Talboys, but he never lost countenance, and at the next station Lady Kicklebury rushed out of the smoking carriage and returned to her own place, where, I dare say, Captain Hicks and Miss Fanny were delighted once more to have the advantage of her company and conversation. And so they went back to England, and the Kickleberries were no longer seen on the Rhine. If her ladyship is not cured of hunting after great people, it will not be for want of warning. But which of us in life has not had many warnings? And is it for lack of them that we stick to our little failings still? When the Kickleberries were gone, that merry little Regent Warburg did not seem the same place to me, somehow. The sun shone still, but the wind came down cold from the purple hills. The band played, but their tunes were stale. The promenaders paced the alleys, but I knew all their faces. As I looked out of my windows, in the Tissish house upon the great blank casements lately occupied by the Kickleberries, and remembered what a pretty face I had seen looking thence, but a few days back, I cared not to look any longer. And though Mrs. Milliken did invite me to tea, and talked fine arts and poetry over the meal, both the beverage and the conversation seemed very weak and insipid to me, and I fell asleep once in my chair opposite that highly cultivated being. "Let us go back, Langton," said I to the sergeant, and he was nothing loth, for most of the other sergeants, barristers, and Queen's Counsel were turning homewards. By this time, the period of term time summoning them all to the temple. So we went straight one day to Bibrich on the Rhine, and found the little town full of Britons, all trooping home like ourselves. Everybody comes, and everybody goes away again, at about the same time. The Rhine innkeepers say that their customers cease with a single day almost, that in 3 days they shall have 90, 80, 100 guests. On the 4th, 10, or 8, we do as our neighbors do. Though we don't speak to each other much, when we are out a-pleasuring, we take our holiday in common, and go back to our work in gangs. Little Bibrich was so full, that Langton and I could not get rooms at the large inns frequented by other persons. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.